have a question for you. What are you afraid of? Anyone? What are your fears? Lillian? The dark. The dark. Okay, one. Thank you. Anyone else? Anyone scared of spiders?
Snakes.
Snakes, Alice. There are many in Yarmouth.
Food past its sell-by date.
Food past its sell-by date. He's so weird. You've just got to... Anyone else?
Illness.
Getting lost.
What, literally, like in the car, being in the middle of nowhere? Yeah. I didn't know whether you were being really deep or not on that show. No, just when the sat nav don't work. Anyone else?
Clowns.
Pardon?
Clowns.
Clowns. Clowns are a bit weird and freaky, aren't they? Yeah, Louise. Yeah, that's a good one, actually. Anyone?
Scared
of heights. Okay, so there's that. I mean, snakes and... Yeah, I put snakes and spiders down was one of the things that I thought someone would say. Heights I definitely put down. I didn't put clowns, but I should have done because that's quite common. People get freaked out by clowns. Elizabeth, I one more.
Having an MRI scan.
They're not... Yeah, I mean, they're harmless, but they're not particularly pleasant to... It's the noise, isn't it? What's interesting is that of everything that you've said, these are things that could only, at their worst, do us physical harm. I'm not sure if getting lost could do us physical harm. I suppose it's where you end up getting lost. So it's, I guess, the fear of being lost. I guess some fears may be things that you didn't want to share out loud in front of the whole church, could cause emotional pain or damage to us. But none has what Jesus calls power over your soul. A spider or a snake or a clown can't affect the state of your soul. A fear of heights won't affect whether you get to heaven or not. The good news is there's not a long stairway, despite what some songs would have you believe, that you have to climb precariously to reach heaven, Louise. I'm going to read to us another verse, a few verses from Matthew chapter 10. It's just 4 or 5 verses. And it's from, if you do want to look it up, it's verse 28 through to verse 31. And this is Jesus talking, and he says, "Do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not 2 sparrows sold for a penny? Yet not one of them will fall to the ground unperceived by your Father. Even the hairs on your head are all counted. So do not be afraid. You are of more value than many sparrows." Last week we looked at the idea of 2020 vision. As we start a new year and a new decade, I asked you the question, what do you want to see more clearly this year? And we then thought about some of the things that stop us from seeing God clearly. And we considered what we might do to change or avoid those pitfalls. And this week is a kind of a follow-up to the idea of 2020 vision. As I've been thinking a little bit more about what it means to see God clearly. And I've been challenged by that first verse that I've read from Proverbs, which is repeated multiple times elsewhere in the Bible. "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge." The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And it's made me think about what the fear of God is all about. Why is it so important? And I wondered, is there room in your faith for a fear of God? Or has God kind of been condensed into a kind of heavenly teddy bear, all cuddles and soft? Maybe it's not something you've ever even thought about before. Well, this morning, whether you like it or not, we're going to talk and think about the fear of God. of what that is all about, and to ask questions of why is it important, and how does this actually fit in with the concept of a God of love, which we emphasise and talk about all the time. And then we'll think about how we might develop a healthy fear of God in our own lives. But we're going to start at the beginning. What actually is the fear of God? Is it like being afraid of snakes or spiders or fear of heights? Well, it would be easy to try and explain away fear with words like respect or revering God. But the reality is there's more to it than that. We can't just say, oh, it was just a word that the translators used to put in, but it could be respecting God. Because actually, in the Old Testament, when it was written originally in Hebrew, if we translate the word that's used for fear in passages like the one in Proverbs 1, it could also be interpreted as terror or dread. Now, those are very different words to respect or revere. And when Jesus talks about fearing God in Matthew 10, in that second passage I read, he's clearly talking about an actual fear and concern for God. A God who's powerful, capable of destroying body and soul, is what he says. And this points to a God who seems quite scary. But we don't talk about God like that in church anymore. And I'm sure that's not what our children are being taught downstairs, although Peter's gone down there, so all bets are off the table. He might go full Old Testament on William and Bella. So what's going on here? Have we simply reduced God and taken away the sharp edges that we don't like? Well, maybe. That might be partly true. But I think the real problem is that we are seeking fewer experiences of God in our daily lives. There's a real danger, and I'm speaking here as someone who too easily falls into this trap, that our faith becomes defined by knowledge about God without knowledge of God. Now, what I mean by that is that the overwhelming majority of you here this morning believe, know that God exists, trust in Jesus as Lord. But the practice of our faith can become primarily about learning about God rather than forging a relationship with God. It's very easy, and this is something that academics can easily fall into, that we learn all these things about who God is. You can know the Bible from cover to cover. You can spout doctrine with the best of them, but still not know of God. Still not have a relationship with the living God. And this isn't a great illustration, but I think you'll kind of get what I mean here. It's a bit like having a head knowledge of God without any heart knowledge. When we get to know God, when we spend time in God's presence, seeking God, making space for God, then it's inevitable that we will be reminded of the awesomeness of God. That sense of how different, how mysterious God is. And with that comes a dose of fear as well. We see it with Isaiah. If you remember Isaiah chapter 6, Isaiah encounters God. He has a vision in the throne room of heaven. And as he encounters God, he cries out, "Woe to me! I'm ruined, for I am a man of unclean lips." Peter has a similar response to Jesus in Luke chapter 5. When he falls to his knees and he says, "Go away from me, Lord, for I'm a sinful man." There's this sense of fear, of dread, being in the presence of God because they realise who they are and who God is. There's a theologian, he was prominent in the early part of the 20th century, Rudolf Otto. And he talks about these genuine encounters with God. And he says that they prompt three responses in us. One is an awareness of the mystery and utter holiness of God. That sense that we're humans and God isn't. God is something different. God is other. Secondly, that we encounter this kind of sense of awe. He calls it holy dread. And finally, a wonder which draws us towards God. In spite of the mystery, in spite of the fear, that we're somehow still drawn towards God. There's something attractive that makes us want more, to desire more of these encounters, more of God's presence. C.S. Lewis talks about it as well, but he puts it a bit more vividly. And so I'm going to adapt what he says to kind of contextualize it for this room. Imagine for a second that I told you that in the prayer room, which is unlocked, there was a fully grown tiger. There's a tiger in the prayer room. He's not come for dinner. Well, he might have done. He might be off. He might be hungry. Now, how would you feel if I told you there was a tiger in the prayer room? You'd probably be aware of an imminent sense of danger. You'd probably be afraid. You'd probably be making out for the door. But what if I had to tell you instead that there's a ghost in the prayer room? You can see him. There's a ghost in the prayer room. Now, if you believe me, you'd probably also have a sense of fear. But it'd be different to the kind of fear you'd get of having a tiger in the prayer room. It wouldn't be about danger, because we're not really afraid of what a ghost would do to us. We're simply afraid because of the fact it's a ghost, and that's rather unusual. It's different. We don't really know what that's all about. It's mysterious, but it's not dangerous. And this is what C.S. Lewis calls dread. And he says that such feelings can be experienced in an encounter with God. Now imagine if I told you that there was a mighty spirit in this room. Yeah, let's hope so, yeah. Now, if you believed that, your feelings wouldn't be one of danger. But you'd probably be disturbed. You'd perhaps wonder. Perhaps you'd feel a sense of inadequacy to cope with the greatness of this mighty spirit filling the room. And Lewis calls this feeling awe. He says it's also caused by an encounter with God. Now, I like the phrase holy dread, because it seems to describe how so many characters throughout the Bible first respond to an encounter with God. They're filled with a sense of their own shortcomings. Or maybe to be more accurate, actually, they're so aware of God's perfection and God's holiness that they realize how different they are. And yet at the same time, they're drawn to God. They're like a moth that can't stop moving towards the light. There's an attractiveness that ignites a deep desire for more. This is the love of God in action. Perhaps it's why God says so frequently in the Bible, "Do not be afraid." Rick Warren reckons there's 365 variants of "do not be afraid" or "do not fear." One for every day of the year, apart from leap year. God knows that we will experience fear, the holy dread, if you like, when we encounter him. But that's just the beginning of knowledge of who God is. And when God says, "Don't be afraid," we're being reminded not to allow that fear to paralyze us or to stop us from seeking God. And I think this is important because it helps us to make sense of some of the other bits in the Bible, such as 1 John 4, where it says, "Perfect love casts out all fear." And it says it elsewhere as well, "Perfect love casts out all fear." Well, if we're meant to have a fear of God, but God is perfect love, and perfect love casts out all fear, how do we reconcile what seems to be two very different messages coming out of the Bible? How do we reconcile a healthy fear of God with the perfect love of God? Well, the answer lies in our passage from Matthew. Jesus shows that there is a balance between what we might see as a negative, as a fear of God, and If we're honest, when we read that, when Jesus says, be afraid of the one who can kill body and soul and send them to hell, it's a pretty terrifying prospect. It's balanced straight after by a positive. Because this one who has this power, God, is the same Father who cares even for the sparrows in the sky. And if he cares for the sparrows in the sky, how much more does he care for you? You're worth so much more than a little sparrow. This is a God who can count the hairs on your head. Although, looking around, that's probably easier for some than others. The point Jesus is making is that whilst we're right to fear God, we are also loved and cared for by God. And that doesn't make you immune to suffering. Even Jesus suffered. And he suffered in the most terrible ways. But it does mean that God will walk with you through suffering. And he'll lead you through it and eventually into eternal life. Now, we can't help but fear God when we encounter God. But that's not where the encounter stops. It seems to me that there are other religions which, albeit with my limited knowledge, seem to be driven by a fear of God. The essence of the relationship between human and God is one of fear. Well, I have to do this in case God sort of smites me. But our God doesn't stop there, because our God is a God of love. So where does this all leave us? Why is this important? Well, my hope is that this encourages us to discover, or maybe rediscover, the fear of God. Because to do this is to allow ourselves to be lifted up into a place of awe and wonder. To encounter God in a way that goes beyond the kind of faith that's reduced to some kind of moral compass or as a self-help tool. Relationship with God is more than that. God just doesn't want you to simply live by a list of rules and regulations. The fullness of life is not about that. To have a fear of God present within your faith is to put the onus back on God rather than on ourselves. When was the last time, outside of a Sunday morning, that you put to one side your shopping list of prayers and dwelt in the presence of God? When you worship God or made time for God simply because he's worth worshipping. Now, I find listening to Christian music helps me to kind of move away from the busyness of life and to kind of move from church work, because it's very easy for me to sort of assimilate relationship with God with, well, what have I got to do in church? So sometimes putting some music on helps me kind of distance myself from that and create some space for God. Often I do that in my study when I'm on my own at home, because I can take the time and the space to worship God, to get caught up in the songs of praise. And it's remarkable the way that God will respond in these times. These are some of the only times in my life where I can find myself getting tearful. Sometimes God exposes my own sinfulness to me, and it becomes an opportunity for me to find forgiveness. Other times it's simply a chance to sit and be still, knowing that this time is God time. This is the beginning of knowledge and the path to understanding that Proverbs talks about. Now this year, if you truly want to see God more clearly, then the desire for godly wisdom should be high on your wanted list. And this starts with seeking God. It starts with making time for God. And actually of allowing the fear of God, the holy dread, if you like, to become a part of your faith. To give God permission to allow that to become part of your relationship with him. Rather than the kind of the custom God, which the rough edges The sharp bits have been sort of chiseled off. Allow God to be God. To know that is the beginning of knowing God. Fear God, but do not be afraid. Amen.